Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we're about to have a conversation with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who represents Maryland's District 40 here in Baltimore City. And, of course, she is seeking to become the next mayor of Baltimore City. And, Senator, welcome. Good to have you with us here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
And you all please join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Some tweets have already come in, but tweet some more at Mark Steiner. Call in at 410-319-8888 with your questions, thoughts, and ideas for Senator Pugh. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can also write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. But 410-319-8888 is the number. So you made the run once before, but decided to make the run again. Let's just talk politics just for a minute.
Absolutely.
Why did you what did you learn from that last run? Why did you throw your hat in the ring again?
I learned a lot from the last run. One, it gave me an opportunity to get my voice out there, to have people hear my various views on issues and so forth. And many of those issues that I discussed back then have not changed. I think I learned a little bit more about campaigning and structure and organization and inclusion and all the things that are necessary to win a campaign. You know, it's easy to look back and see your shortcomings. It's more importantly be able to learn from them. But I threw my hat into the ring this time because the mayor is not running. And I threw my hat in because I believe that the city still suffers some of the many problems that I acknowledged 5 years ago, as well as with the focus and the leadership that I've had taken upon myself as a state senator and, more importantly, as a community leader. I was really overwhelmed in some ways by what took place in April as it relates to the Freddie Gray incident, and then being on the ground every single day inside the community, talking with individuals, people from the streets to the suites, to basically hear what people's concerns were. You know, oftentimes as you go through the legislature and you're focused on developing legislation or bringing back bond bills, you're not as focused on some of the things that are really important, except for me, having been a city council person, as you well know, and also one who has served the city and at the Council of Legal Business Opportunities, helping people start their own businesses and expand. You know, I started out in banking. I was here at Morgan State University. Actually sat behind the mic at one point here.
You did?
Yep. And also taught here at Morgan State University and special editor to the Sun Papers. I just think I have a broad range of experience, both statewide, citywide, nationally, and internationally. And I think President Obama said it best when he said, "The reason we invited you to sit with the First Lady is because of the work that you've done, not just in your city or your state, but the work and the leadership that you've done across the country." I think I bring all that to bear in terms of leadership that this city needs, one, to create jobs and opportunities for people throughout the city. I believe everybody who wants to work should be able to work. We've got to lure manufacturing and other opportunities back to the city. Talk with the Japanese embassy about that, talking with other delegations about doing that, and the need to really figure out how do we get people more concerned in our neighborhoods about how we collectively work together in terms of the reduction of crime in our communities. I had a conversation yesterday down at City Hall. One of the things I started some years ago, Baltimoreans United to Light Baltimore, because I have always believed that the city is too dark and that part of public safety is creating a brighter city. And so we've got to light up our streets. There was a group from Old Goucher down at City Hall yesterday complaining about the darkness of their street and the inability to be able to attract traffic to those neighborhoods. But the problems in Baltimore take up many categories, whether it is education, public safety, economic opportunity, and inclusion. I think we fall in those categories, creating jobs and opportunities for people and providing the services. People often see government as a service-oriented. And while it is service-oriented, it is also opportunity that come as a result of government. And I just want us to be more inclusive in that process.
So a couple of things just to pull out. You mentioned you declared your candidacy after the Mayor Rawlings Blake decided not to run.
No, I declared my candidacy right after Labor Day, but had been given indications that
she wasn't. Would you? So, if you had not had those indications, would you have run?
I would have taken a very close look at it in terms of the feasibility and the possibilities. I believe that some of the things that the mayor has done has been very positive for the city. when you look at, for example, vacancy values, well, how do you take it to another level? Some of the incentives that have been offered, the balancing of the city's budget, you know, I think that there were some great things that were done by this administration. I think that's part of the problem we have in terms of leadership, that oftentimes when we come in, we want to just tear away everything that's been done as opposed to building on top of some of the great things. I think back to the days of William Donald Schaefer and the Dollar House program, where we didn't figure out how to push that program forward after the federal funds dried up. You know, when you look around the city now with the number of Board of Houses that are in our city, can we not give those houses away for a dollar or create a special taxing district where you give somebody the house for a dollar and say, because you are rebuilding this part of our city, instead of us taxing you at the tax rate that we currently have, why not say, you know, pay the city $1,000 or whatever it is for the next 15 years while you fix up your house and you live in it? So there are a number of things that concern me that I don't think that we've addressed in a way that can continue moving administrations forwards or efforts forwards. But I do believe that one of the things that we must do is create a government of transparency and accountability as it relates to our spending, what each agency has. I always believe that we need to turn government inside out and upside down and appropriate our funds appropriately that way they impact the areas that we're concerned about, whether it's job creation or education, all of those things we have to take some concern about.
No, we just got a bunch of tweets in, so keep tweeting at Mark Steiner, but do call in at 410-319-8888 to put your voices on the air as well for State Senator Catherine Pugh, who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore to win the Democratic nomination in April. And the first tweet we got in this morning was from Sherilyn Eiffel, who's former professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law and is now head of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund in New York and D.C. And she tweeted in, please ask about the Red Line and transportation in Baltimore. The NAACP and the LDF,
just filed a recent lawsuit
against the state around the Red Line as being discriminatory also and questioning how they came to that decision. So what are your thoughts, A, about that lawsuit, and B, about the future of transportation, which many people think since the destruction of the idea of building a Red Line and these new ideas coming in makes an abysmal situation even worse for city residents.
Right. I'm always grateful for the justice system and for the NAACP and the Legal Defense Fund and the efforts that they push forward on behalf of all people. I think everybody's very clear, especially those of us from Baltimore, that the Red Line, not having the Red Line, has a great economic impact on our community. It was a jobs creator. It was a transportation mechanism that would have linked us from one side of town to the other, would have also created a link to some of the county jobs that are available. So not having that certainly has a very negative impact on, again, I think Barbara Mikulski would say to you that they spent, you know, years pulling together over $900 million worth of funding for the Red Line and anticipated without a doubt that this would infuse opportunities into Baltimore. So it is not having it is a very negative impact on the city. I understand the bus system that the governor has put forth $135 million for. Is it needed? Absolutely. But in conjunction with the Red Line, that would have helped put us, Baltimore, on the map in terms of its ability to transport people from one end of town to the other, from one jurisdiction to the other, and it created a better opportunity for employment for our city.
What do you think about do you agree with the lawsuit? Do you think that lawsuit should have been filed against the governor and his plan?
I have not read the lawsuit currently, but I would think that if this helps to rectify the losing of the Red Line, again, I'll leave it to the justice system.
So I'm curious what you think about that. I mean, one of the things that I know you, especially you and maybe a couple of others, will talk about are the connections you have nationally and statewide in your race for mayor. The governor has made statements about Baltimore statements about Baltimore being the crime out of control without really talking about people in this community. He made people think he's kind of left Baltimore out of his picture for the future of the state. Even the map he put out, remember, it didn't have Baltimore in the map. That this, the Red Line to it as well. I mean, so what What about that contentious position for the next mayor of the city?
Well, I don't think it can be a contentious position. I think the next mayor has to make it very clear, and I think this mayor too has to make it very clear that we have an agenda for moving our city forward, and a portion of that will depend on public-private partnerships and the relationship with the state as well as with our federal partners who have been good partners to the city of Baltimore. But we have to develop a relationship with the governor because, again, we get so many of our funds from the state, and we cannot afford for changes to be made that pushes us back as opposed to push this city forward. And this certainly was a jobs crusher for Baltimore. And I'm sure that there'll be discussion about this in Annapolis, even though the $900 million is gone. But there will be a fight in Annapolis on behalf of the city. And I think what people have to understand is that we have lost power in Annapolis. And I'm sure you remember when we were 10 senators down in Annapolis, and now we're down to 5 1/4. You know, so we're losing power because we've lost population, and other jurisdictions are growing and we're shrinking. And so we've got to focus on how do we grow our population so we can grow our power base in Annapolis so that we can have more influence. And we do have some because we have connections with other jurisdictions that we work very closely with, whether it's Baltimore County, Howard County, Harford County, Montgomery County. You know, if Baltimore doesn't rise, if Baltimore doesn't grow, the state will suffer. You know, this is the center of tourism. This is where, I don't care where you're from, people from Baltimore and the surrounding jurisdictions, when they leave town, they say, where you're from? They say Baltimore. So this city is dependent on not just its community, but the state and the federal government. But we also have to depend on private-public partnerships. I mean, that's where you see some of the growth in the city taking place.
So I'm going to come to all that. And folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. We're talking with State Senator Catherine Pugh. We have a lot of tweets coming in, though. Let me get to some of those, at Mark Steiner. Michael Wood Jr. tweeted in, is she interested in grassroots support? The movement knows her not.
Hmm.
Let's talk a bit about that.
I think that's debatable. Because I get calls from my young people, especially in the streets on a regular basis. I stood on the corner every day during the unrest, but I also was on the corner the night before the verdict came out because my young folks called me and said, we need you here. I'm in and out of the community on a regular basis. I think that when you look at what I've done with young people and mentoring and so forth, giving away over $250,000 in scholarships every year, mostly to young people in this city who are in schools, but also relating to the folks who are on the streets. I sit inside of community groups and organizations and with young people. We stood on the corner, again, praying on behalf of our city in prayer that this city would be peaceful as it was the day after the verdict. So I'm always interested in everyone. I tell people it's from the streets to the suites. Everybody is important. Everybody's input is important in the city.
So how would you say to respond to people that might perceive Catherine Pugh as closer to the suites than the streets? And I say that because, not saying you are, I'm saying that because, you know, we look at the poll that the Sun put out, mm-hmm. and in terms of your popularity was percentage-wise was larger in the white community than it was in the black community, and that people see, some people say that's a disconnect. I mean, that's, I think, what this email was trying to say.
What do you think of that? Well, I think if you go back to my history, whether it is having taught here at Morgan or taught it at the Astoria Business College, where I dealt with all people of all walks of life, and then when you look at the work that I've done, you know, I'm the person who's responsible for moving the compulsory attendance age to 18 in the state because so many of our young people were dropping out of school. 76% of all African-American males were dropping out of school, 72% being incarcerated in the juvenile justice system. I'm the person who's responsible for the setting up of all alternative schools in this city so that children wouldn't be pushed out of school but would have the opportunity to get their education. So I think I've been squarely focused. I'm the person who created and pushed the Fish Out of Water Project that raised $1 million and wired our classroom. I also built the first brand new school in this city in 30 years, the Baltimore Design School, focused on young people from 6th to 12th grade. I'm the person who's pushing Judy Centers to start educating our children at 6 weeks of age so that we can get them more prepared to enter our school system. I sit on 23 community boards, and many of them are youth organizations and groups. So I continue to keep my doors are open. My phone is open. My office is open. I always have interns from Coppin and from Morgan State University who work in my office during sessions. So I mentor probably about 12 or 15 young women and about 7 or 8 young boys on a regular basis. And I think if you walk the streets with me and in my community, my young people will tell you that I've always paid close attention to making sure that they can be successful.
So Ralik replied in a tweet. I was just tweeting today, but you're not calling. You can call 410-319-8888. We'll love your tweets, but call too. 410-319-8888 as we talk with Catherine Pugh, of course, who wants to become fighting to become the next mayor of Baltimore here, and our continuing conversations with those who are running for mayor for our city. 410-319-8888. Ralik tweeted in, replying to the last tweet, saying, "I won't say we don't know her, but do our politics align? That's questionable." This is Ralik Hayes, who's one of the leaders of Be More Block in our community. So,
I look at public service. I look at politics from a public service perspective. My focus has always been on public service. I think I just introduced one of the largest job training bills in the state that will be introduced in this session. So, again, my doors are always open. People can come in my office anytime they want. They email me, they text me, and people will tell you, when you ask me to help you with something, if I can, I do.
So let's look at some really issues that really face our city here and kind of get some of them going through this conversation, and keep tweeting it at Mark Steiner. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org, 410-319-8888, as we talk with Senator Catherine Pugh. So one of the issues clearly at the front and center in our city right now has to do with these trials and the death of Freddie Gray, have to do with the nature of policing in Baltimore. And there are a number of questions. Let me just start with, do you think there should be a civilian review board that actually has the teeth to either recommend people being indicted or exonerated, police that is, and to changing the Law Officers' Bill of Rights?
Well, there are efforts underway to change the Officers' Bill of Rights and to looking at civilian review boards and how they should be responded to in the city.
Do you think we need one with that kind of power in the city, a civilian review board with that kind of power?
I think that we need a civilian review board, and I think that there should be powers given to the civilian review board, and we're discussing that currently. And there'll be a meeting, I believe it's January the 11th, looking at a number of issues as it relates to the Police Bill of Rights.
Do you have a position on the Civilian Review Board and whether or not we should have it?
I think we should have a Civilian Review Board.
Because we have one now that has absolutely no teeth. It can't do anything. It just sits there, can't do a thing. So the question is, should it have the power to really investigate and question police and question citizens and make recommendations for either indictment or exoneration? I mean, should that be the power of a civilian overseeing what happens in these instances?
I think there should be a police civilian review board, and I think that it should encompass members of the community who have that power to subpoena and to provide that information. Absolutely.
So, I mean, some people, there's a huge divide, obviously, in our community around between the police and the community. That's huge. I mean, it's obviously larger inside the black community with the police than it is with the white community and police, but it's fairly significant with many Latino populations and with the black community in the city, no matter what class people come from, especially though poor working people. I mean, every day we have calls.
Well, I think when you look at the issue of community policing, part of the issue is the lack of respect that has been shown to the community, and also the lack of knowledge and cultural diversity that needs to exist. When you think about, for example, that less than 25% of your police force lives in the city, none of our police cars come home. That has to create a disconnect in the community. And so even the President Obama's policing reform report talked about the need for police departments to mirror the community, and that there ought to be cultural diversity training by every police force so that they have knowledge of the community and interact with the neighborhoods. I was saying the other day that one of the problems we have now is that nobody really wants to be a police officer, not like when I was growing up. But at that time, when I was growing up, we had public safety patrols that were in our schools who created that awareness of what public safety officers are supposed to do. And we don't have that. I've had that discussion with the police department. We don't have police athletic leagues. and we're not recruiting in all of the neighborhoods to mirror the reflection of the community. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, you know, not just on the police bill of rights, but just the education aspect of it, the respect level that needs to be developed in our neighborhoods, and the interaction that needs to take place between the community and the police officers.
So another question, let me be fair and go back to our listeners here who are calling in at 410-319-8888 to talk with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore and actually co-chairs a commission that we've been talking about police reform in the state legislature. 410-319-8888 is the number, and Kathy in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning, Kathy.
Morning. I just want to just ask a question, then I'll get off the air and answer.
Sure, sure.
Don't you think that you being in Annapolis would be a better service than in the city? Because it's just been my observation, whenever people were in high positions like mayors, governors, or presidents, they basically have to be at the realm of the local jurisdictions, the city councils, the delegation in Annapolis, the representatives in Congress, and also... That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
A good question. Let me just say, I was a former city council person, and I was a good city council person. I was wired the classrooms, provided instruments for the children, started the Baltimore Marathon. It has a $40 million impact on the city and the state legislature. I am now the majority leader. I've been very good at making sure that I'm attentive to the issues as it relates to the city and state. The reason that I'm focused on becoming the next mayor is because I want to focus on how we grow and develop our city, increase opportunities for jobs, focus on how we take our school system back. I think that everything that I've done, whether it is in public life or private life, has prepared me to be the mayor of this city, and so I'm looking forward to that opportunity.
So back to the phones, 410-319-8888. We're here with State Senator Catherine Pugh. Your thoughts and questions for her. We'll check the tweets, check the Facebook page. But do call us, 410-319-8888. Kenneth, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Kenneth.
And good morning to you, guys. Catherine.
Good morning.
I would like to ask you a question. If you become mayor, how do you feel about police officers wearing cameras? Mm. And will you approve that, stress that, and also will you spend time in the various troubled neighborhoods and deal with the housing situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple things.
There's a lot of things there.
Yeah,
let's start with the first.
But some good questions. The body camera, I voted for the body camera bill. In fact, the city was doing a pilot project, so I amended the state's bill so that it would allow the city to continue to move forward with body cameras. The president's policing report recommended body cameras for all police officers who are on our streets. So, yes, I would be in favor of that as well.
So, I should take a quick break here and come right back with Senator Catherine Pugh.
We currently do have a body camera law.
We do, and there are, at this moment, there are 150 police officers
who are now
testing three different kinds of cameras and giving feedback to the commissioner to see what they do. But I do have should we go to break now? Ready? Yeah, we're going to go to break. Then I'll come back with a question about that as well and go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. We're here with State Senator Catherine Pugh. Don't go away. Stay with us.
Yeah.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are here with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore City. Primary takes place in
April 26th.
April 26th, to be exact. 410-319-8888. Your questions for the senator? Tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. Please do join us. We want to hear your thoughts and ideas for the senator and what you would like to know. You can also write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. 410-319-8888. So, Kenneth had another question about housing, right, so housing. You wanted to respond to him.
Yes, because I talked about it a little bit earlier about how we need to focus on reducing the number of Board of Houses, expanding on the Vacants to Values program, looking into our community at those who are looking for housing, creating special taxing districts to help us get rid of some of the Board of Houses, but at the same time, looking at some of those areas and seeing if there's areas that we just need to tear down and create green space or redevelop in a different way. And so I think that that's really important, because what that does is, and I'm sure people will tell you, that Board of Houses help to breed crime. And so if we're talking about crime reduction, that has to be a part of our crime reduction strategy as well.
So I want to come back to the housing issue. There are a couple of things I wanted to kind of pull back out. I think most everybody at this point supports the idea of body cameras as being
yes.
a logical place to go.
Mm-hmm.
But going deeper into that, I mean, again, going back to what I said earlier about this huge divide that happens between the police and the citizens of the city, that find the police abusive, that find them rude, and while you can have body cameras on people, which, as we all say, is important, there are many people who raise the issues I have on this program for many years of the systemic issues of racism inside that police department. And you talk to most black citizens in the city, 8 out of 10 people have had a bad interaction with the police, from abuse to just being harassed. A man 60 years old called the show yesterday saying he was on his way downtown, sitting on a bus stop. He said, "I'm going to stop. Police officer pulls me over. So I'm going to frisk you. Why am I going to frisk you? Because you can frisk you here or downtown." And then the man then described himself as being a 63-year-old man with white hair and a white beard, telling him he fit the description of somebody who snatched purses from somebody in the street. Not too many white-bearded men are snatching purses on the streets of Baltimore. So, I mean, there's a real serious problem.
Oh, I don't think anybody's denying that there's not a serious problem.
But no mayor seemed to be able to get their hands around it.
So, well, part of it is, again, leadership matters, experience matters, and one of the things we've been talking about, I mean, I'm not just talking about this from a local perspective. As the national president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, we pulled in folks from around the nation to talk about how do we reduce this negativity that's impacting neighborhoods throughout this nation. And the data will show you that many of these police departments don't reflect the community. And so there has to be training, there has to be recruitment, there has to be a transition in terms of cultural diversity, there has to be the allowance of police officers to live in our cities, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, so that person is not just a police officer on the street, but he's your neighbor and he becomes your friend and he becomes concerned about what happens in your communities and in your neighborhoods because they become his community or her community and their neighborhood as well. That doesn't exist in a city where less than 25% of police officers live in the city. That's an issue.
It is.
So part of it has to be recruitment. You know, where are we recruiting for these officers? It has to be training. And we talk about cultural diversity training, especially when you're not reflecting the communities and the neighborhoods in which you function. And that's a discussion that I know is going on now with the various police departments. That is an issue that is not just in Baltimore City, but around the state and around the country. So that's a focus that this mayor will take a lead in terms of helping to direct the police department, in terms of its recruiting efforts, in terms of its training mechanisms, in terms of its infusing officers to live in our communities and in our city.
So one of the things that came up in the show the other day, Monday, as a matter of fact, with a roundtable that included the Reverend Todd Yeary and Michael Johnson, Sarah Love from the ACLU, from Power Inside. And so one of the things that came up in that program was that, I think Todd read this on the air, Todd Yeary, that Baltimore has the 8th largest police department in the country, in a city of only 620,000 people, that we have we spend more per capita on the police than any other city in the country.
And part of that is that we have on our police force too many people who are doing civilian jobs who are police officers.
Do we have too many people on the force is the question. Do
right.
we need to use that money other ways?
Absolutely.
We spend $500 million on police.
Well,
should we spend that money in other ways other than just police?
I think we can spend our money more wisely and we can spend it differently. And as you look at the police department, what you got to look at is who's on the police department that are civilian folks who are doing civilian jobs. You know, does it require these us to hire police officers to do some of the jobs that are civilian jobs? You know, some of the jobs anybody can do. It doesn't require you to go through the police academy. And so we don't need to hire police to do desk jobs and things like that, or you know, to answer phones or to compute information and that kind of stuff. So, you know, again, I think as the mayor of the city, you have a responsibility to look inside every single agency, including the police department, to see how your resources are being spent and how they're being distributed and how you distribute them more wisely. We spend less on education than we do on policing, and we need to take some ownership of our school system, which is something else that I would be pushing for.
Does that mean the police budget should be cut so you can afford these other
things? I think that you take a look at the police budget, the city's budget. You know, you look at it from a business perspective. How are you spending money in terms of your resources? Where is your greatest need? Education, job creation, public safety. People want their cities to be safe, but have you hired police officers to do civilian jobs, and should those jobs be allowed to be taken by civilians and people living in your city and in your communities, not necessarily police officers? And I think that when we do that audit and we scrub that budget, I think that you will find that we can eliminate some of those jobs for police officers.
Let me go back to the phone, Senator. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who is running to become the Democratic nominee for mayor in April, on April 26th. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Bubby in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, sir, Miles Steiner. Thank you much for taking my call.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
I would just like to say my name is Lucky Crosby Sr., and I'm the whistleblower at the Housing Authority of Baltimore City that was terminated by Mr. Paul Graziano. And I'm confused. I live in your district, and I would like to know why haven't any one of you all walked over to the Housing Authority office at 417 and demand my reinstatement? You talking about liability. If I'm not reinstated soon, this city going to have a liability paying myself and Jay Wendell Gordon a lot of money.
So Lucky's been a guest on the show. And Lucky and the president of that union early on said to the housing commissioner, that there were workers who were forcing women to sexual favors to fix their places up. They were fired. Many people would argue that, some people would argue that the housing, Department of Housing itself, especially the HBC part of it, is in disarray. That we have these gigantic surpluses. What are they being used for? To pay off certain debts to Annapolis instead of being used to house homeless people. We're now seeing the mayor saying, wait till you get 0 degrees before you give homeless people homes. We'll get to that in a moment. Or shelter, I should say. So what about what Lucky was raising?
I think there are two agencies operating by one person. HABC and HCD should be separated. They're
correct.
Two separate agencies. I also also implemented and introducing a law in Annapolis this session to make it illegal for anyone to solicit and to put women in that kind of position. I think I already announced that. I believe that, you know, he can talk to me offline as it relates to his particular case personally, which I'm not completely familiar with.
How do you handle people like, if you're mayor, how do you handle people like Lucky Crosby?
Well, it's the same way that we do it in Annapolis.
Who are whistleblowers?
Whistleblowers should have whistleblower protection. We have it in the state of Maryland, you know, for the health care program. We put in whistleblower protection for health care in the state. So there should be whistleblower protection for anyone who is operating in the best interest of the city, the state, or the nation. We have it in other agencies. We should have it in the housing department as well.
I have so many questions to ask, but I'm going to go back to our listeners here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Dr. Akita Pearson in Columbia. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to make a comment echoing the position that Senator Pugh has made as it relates to education. It is absolutely one of the most center-important elements of our existence. And I always look at the element of a community, of a school system, where the education lies. And it's truly an intellectual death that has been suffered by so many in Baltimore. And what she is saying as relates to educating all the constituents, all the stakeholders, is extremely important to the next mayor that takes the position, because all of the training, all of the professional development, it has to be rooted in the cultural diversity, the cultural proficiency that she has been sharing, and it shed so much light as relates to the crux of so many of the issues and the disparities and inequities and inequalities that people have been suffering for so long in Baltimore City. So I commend you, Senator Pugh, for highlighting that and making that one of the front and foremost positions in your campaign. Thank you.
Thank you. And it is important that we begin. I don't know whether you're familiar with the Judy Centers, where they begin at 6 weeks of age. And the other thing that I'm proposing is that, you know, the difference in Baltimore Design School and many of our public schools is that we have our own board of directors. Every school should have its own board of directors. We don't have children in the school. Some of us don't have children at all. But we've invested in an institution that is a public institution in our city. We've infused, because you put around the table private-public partnerships, people who care about education and who want to infuse resources into a school system. We've infused over $1 million in that school because it's the one that we've, you know, I started, but more importantly, the one that I work with my stakeholders, Fred Lazarus, Steve Ziger. And when you look in that building, people say, is it a charter school? Is it a private school? No. It's a choice school by children all throughout the city. They audition when they get to the ninth grade, but it is state-of-the-art. We've put state-of-the-art equipment in that building. Their labs are second to none. Their science labs are second to none. Their computer labs are second to none. And their machinery and equipment is second to none because we've infused that. Can you imagine if every public school in our city had the similar type of approach?
Let me ask you about that. I mean, I'm going to get another tweet, and I have another question. We'll get to Bernard, the next caller up here at 410-319-8888, as we talk with Senator Catherine Pugh, who's running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. So I've seen the design school. It's incredible. I taught at Baltimore School for the Arts for 9 years. Incredible school. A lot of number of schools like that in the city that are doing really well. But public-private partnerships are important, no doubt. But we cannot build a school system on public-private partnerships.
No, I didn't even suggest that.
What I'm saying is, so if they have a board of directors, there's only but so much money people can raise around. So what do you do to ensure that students in our city get to go to schools that are adequate and have the kind of labs you're talking about in every school, and not have to kind of fight to get into a design school and maybe not get in?
I don't think I was even suggesting that at all, because first of all, we bought back money for 23 brand new schools in this city.
I'm saying that
I believe that every child should have the proper education. I believe that before you even exit a building in a neighborhood, that it should be repurposed, that you make sure that you're providing the opportunities. But that takes leadership. And that also means when you're looking at your education system and you're looking at the dollars that this city spends, and if you remember correctly, under Kurt Schmoke, when he was in need of money for the school system, he went to the state and he said, I need $50 million for a five-year period. No one since then has evaluated that partnership or that relationship to see where it is currently, what the impact of it is,
and what we need to be doing. But what I'm asking is what do we do as mayor? So that the thousands of kids that don't get in the school for the arts, the thousands of kids that do not get into the design school, that they have the kind of education they need. How do we ensure that is what I'm saying. This is not a critique of the design school. I think it's incredible. I'm glad it's there. I love the fact that it's there. I love the fact that we have some incredible high schools and other schools in our community. But the issue is, how do we ensure a public school system that's adequate for all of our children, not just the ones who get into design school or any other school?
Well, as I said, as the mayor of the city, one of the things that I will evaluate is the public-private partnership, which I've put in place this session to look at the public-private partnership, because there is a formula in place at the state where certain monies flow to the school system. Is that relationship still valuable today? Have we looked at our city budget, whether it be the police department or the Department of Housing or Purchasing or Health or whatever? We have to look at all of these agencies. If education is our top priority, then we ought to be directing more money towards education. That's my mantle. Mm-hmm. We ought to be looking at how do we build our population so that we can increase resources in our city. We ought to be looking at how do we bring manufacturing and business opportunities back to our city so that we can infuse capital into the areas that we deem to be the most important. education has to be important because it is the wave to our future opportunities and employment. When we look at our school system, I'm also looking at, are we training our children properly? Are we preparing those who are ready to go to work to go to work? Are we preparing those who are ready to go to college to be competitive? All of these things, as a mayor, I think you have a responsibility to evaluate and make sure that you put in place the best resources, the most resources. And only reason I mention public-private partnerships is because I believe that that is essential, not just for education, but in terms of how do we bring business back to the city. It's a relationship with the private sector. You know, who helps to lure those businesses back to the city? You know, what other resources can we infuse into our school system, into our city? And that's why when I look at, for example, the TIF program, are we providing TIFs in areas of the city where it's really needed? And that's something that we have to look at down the road. If we can create great downtowns, we can create great neighborhoods, and we can put TIFs in those particular communities as well. And so when I become the mayor of the city, with the blessings of the community who I hope will support me, it will be a person who will sit down and listen, because I tell people good ideas become great ideas when you infuse them with others. This is not you can't do this by yourself. You have to have great input by great, smart people. We will surround ourselves with the best and the brightest, but we will listen to everyone, as I continue to say, from the streets to the suites, because everybody has a part to play in making a city great. And I believe as the next mayor of this city, my mandate will be to make this city the greatest city in America, and one that people will point to and recognize as a city that is moving forward with leadership that understands that it must have input from everyone to be successful.
Senator Pugh is in the studio, 410-319-8888. Bernard, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm glad you were speaking about some of the things that you mentioned with regards to the public-private deal. I'm curious to know, what kinds of things will you be attempting to do to make our city more friendly to business? And also, what kinds of things are you going to do to lessen the burden, the tax burden, on homeowners like myself?
Hmm.
I mean, you know, this city, people are leaving it in droves.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I can't find one attractive thing about the city. Sometimes I even wonder why I bought a home here now, okay, after returning to the area.
Hmm.
And finally, because we've had democratic stewardship for all these years, you know, what are you going to bring to the table is going to be different, because every year, you know, you have the primary, Democrats win, and then you get the same old faces at City Hall with the same old programs. I think you need to start fishing from another well.
Well,
so to speak.
Thank you for your question. First, let me just say, as a legislator who works in Annapolis, who works with both Democrats, Republicans, and everybody, I am used to working across the aisles with everyone. When you become the mayor of Baltimore, you don't become the mayor of the Democratic Party. You become the mayor of the city. So that means you have a responsibility to serve all the people. What I talked about public-private partnership is in the sense that I believe that we can open the city up for business. As one who, for example, Morgan State University, when we on my committee was looking at deeming various universities around the state as research institutions, Morgan State University was not included. But I amended the bill to include Morgan State University, and somebody said, why? I said, because we, too, are a research institution. I got a call and a text about less than a month ago from an individual, Japheth Stoswell, who was involved in a patent project here at Morgan State University. And he said to me, I want to thank you because of what you did. We will create thousands of jobs and opportunities because we just got our first patent. So as a leader who has looked both at the city, state, and the national level, my eyes are wide open to opportunities and how we create more. In terms of reducing property taxes, there are a number of issues that I'm looking at. For example, over the last 30, 40 years, we've been giving away TIFs to various businesses and opportunities, and many of those TIFs will come back online. So those projects like the Hyatt Regency and hotels and so forth that we've given TIFs to for decades. So what I'd like to do is dedicate the funds that will come in from those TIFs to the reduction of people's property taxes. And I think it's essential if we're going to be a competitive jurisdiction that we reduce our property tax. And in some cases, I will also be appointing, and in some cases, just look at how to reduce property taxes in certain areas that are really devastated too, in order to stimulate population in those particular communities. I will also appoint a property tax reduction commission, as I did 5 years ago, and I do have some of the recommendations from the commission then. To look at how do we, again, continue to reduce property tax and increase our population, which is essential not only to the power base of our city, but to the growth and expansion of opportunities. I will also work with the business community, as I am now sitting on a commission for the state, looking at how do we make this state more business-friendly and our city more business-friendly.
Let me go back to the tweets here. Theodore Bracey tweeted in, what is the number one problem facing the residents of Baltimore?
I think the number one problem facing the city is safety and jobs. You know, I think they go hand in hand. We've got to create job opportunities for people who need to work, but we also need to create more business opportunities in the city. We've got to make our city more business friendly. I think when you look up and down our corridors at the empty storefronts, we've got to create a retail strategy for our city. We've got too many food deserts in our communities, and we've got to eliminate those by, you know, creating more supermarket opportunities in our city. Crime certainly is an issue for our community. And again, I think that as we look at how do we turn our police force around in terms of cultural diversity, inclusion, economic stability, economic opportunity is number one. We have got to work on how do we infuse more opportunities in our city and get folks respecting the police and the police respecting our communities.
So following up on what our listener just tweeted in, Mr. Bracey, by some accounts, if you look at the numbers of people who are looking for housing subsidies, 99,000 families in the city who in public housing looking for housing are home insecure, cannot afford not to whether pay their rent or to pay mm-hmm. gas and electric bill, which means to me that well over half of our city, at the very least, lives in poverty,
25.
Stuck in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So to me that's, you know, we talk about bringing all these families into Baltimore, but what about those families stuck in poverty? What's the next mayor of Baltimore? How's the next mayor of Baltimore address the kind of serious places that create Freddie Gray's and Frederica Gray's and create the world people live in? How does that change? How do you tackle that?
Well, as I'm tackling it now, as I walk through Sandtown with Dr. Wilson down at New Song and the young guys and the people in the streets, what we're doing now is looking at areas of our city, trying to figure out what kind of training programs, what kind of job programs can we bring to those neighborhoods, what kind of business development will we bring to those neighborhoods, working with Vehicle for Change, for example, looking at putting a training program right in the middle of the city with 9 bays to train folks on automobile repair, and then looking at how do we create educational forums for people who are in need, and then how do you attach what you're training to a job? We can't continue to just train people to mediocrity. I also passed a bill this session creating business opportunities for ex-offenders, because we have 5,000 ex-offenders who come back to the city every year, and a $10 an hour job is not one that can sustain them or allow them to pay child support if necessary, or to even sustain a family. And so when I was campaigning, I think it was 5 years ago, when I stopped by a local business and asked the gentleman if I could put a sign up, and he said yes, and then he turned and he looked at me and he said, "Do you remember me?" And I'm like, "No." He said, "You were my graduation speaker." So I'm thinking college, high school. He said, "No, in prison." I said, "Oh." He said, "But I never forgot what you said." He said, "What you said was, if congratulations, you got your GED, but if you had the capacity to start a business, do so, because nobody walks into anybody's business and asks them what their background is. What they care about is the quality of your service, so give good service." He said, "That was me 5 years ago. This is one business, and when you go across town, put a sign on my other business." But I said that I shared that with you because I wrote a piece of legislation this past session asking the governor if he would sign into law legislation that will allow for the creation of an opportunity for ex-offenders to start their own businesses. So working with Stanley Tucker in February and March, we began to interview individuals who are ex-offenders who want to start their own businesses. He has already committed to financing those opportunities. We will follow them for the next few years to make sure that we're providing them with the wraparound services they need to be successful. I've talked with the University of Baltimore. We'll be talking with the University of Maryland about creating a 24-hour expungement expungement center so people can, you know, get their lives back and get on track. 5,000 people every year. We have to have a plan for them. And that's something that I'll be working on putting in place.
We only have a few minutes left, but let me try to get a call in if we can. And one quick question here. Just, Baltimore is like pothole city. What does the next mayor do to deal with all the potholes in our town? And do you support, as somebody tweeted in earlier, question earlier, twice a week trash pickups? Those two things came through. So
I supported trash 2 week trash days when I was yes, absolutely. And because, first of all, it's like when you go to Annapolis and you're there, and if you're there Monday through Friday, if it's not a Saturday trash day, my trash doesn't get picked up. I got to hire somebody to bring out, you know, to go get the trash. The city needs to figure out how to do trash at least twice a week and either look at trucks that can do both trash and recyclables. I know that that's a feasibility because this city needs to be clean.
So
maybe we'll get back to trash ball. Boom.
I remember trash ball.
Mm-hmm.
We have time for one more caller. So let's go to 410-319-8888. Owen, you're on the air. We're down to our last 2.5 minutes.
Hi, Senator. I have a question that's related to my neighborhood here in Patterson Park community, but I think it is linked to two big issues facing the city, and that's lack of opportunity for youth.
Yes.
And also investing in the harbor area at the expense of other neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And the recent Patterson Park master plan is scheduled to close down the ice skating rink here and move it down to the Ken waterfront. And while I think it's great that the Ken waterfront is developing, I don't think it should develop at the expense of other neighborhoods. And the ice skating rink is a place where people from all classes, all races, ages come together and have a good time in Patterson Park. So you take a look at keeping that open.
We only have a minute left, so I'm going to have to let the senator answer the question.
The answer is yes.
I'm sorry, Owen.
The answer is yes, because we need these resources inside of our communities. And other thing I want to talk about the youth just real quickly. You know, I said this to the ministerial community, and I know they've heard me. Because in just less than a week, they raised over, I think, $10,000 for youth works programs. But every church ought to be involved in making sure that our young people work and that the mayor shouldn't have to ask people to contribute. We should be developing internship programs in every business, every organization, nonprofit, for-profit. I mentioned this to the police commissioner as well. We want our young people infused into our economy as young as they want to be. Every child needs a mentor, and everybody needs to be one. So if you're not mentoring somebody and if you're not a mentee, let's see if we can hook all of that up, because I believe our youth are our future, and what we prepare them with today will help us as we move forward as a city.
State Senator Catherine Pugh, thank you so much for being with us. State Senator from District 40, running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. Always good to have you in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My joy.
See you down the campaign trail.
Look forward to it.
On our way to break, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andrea Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of King Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. The podcast of Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. If you haven't registered to vote, do so. Take care.